There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. And lots to do this hour. I want to start off by talking to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And Angelo, can I talk about what we were just talking about off air?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, let's run with it.
Okay, because we were in a discussion. So Valentine's Day coming up, obviously, and y'all got tons of gifts. But you know I'm very interested in the open-L knives, and you are as well. And we're back and forth. You said you had the kitchen knives coming in. And I said, well, that would be a good gift for Valentine's Day. And there's this thing where, like, you wouldn't give up a vacuum cleaner for Valentine's Day. Even I know that, right? You wouldn't do that. But the knife, It's not the same there. If somebody's really into cooking and all that, the knife is like, it's a real gift item. It's cool.
Oh, it's a very cool, beautiful knife, beautiful gift item. That's probably my Valentine's gift to me this year, you know, most likely. But let's qualify that just one little bit, because you did put a very good point out there. You're not going to just buy the wife a kitchen knife set for Valentine's Day if that's something she does to feed the family. But if she's passionate about cooking, she, you know, brands herself a little bit as a home chef, as a foodie, that's a different story.
Okay, so then we are in agreement. Then for that lady, that would be a really cool gift, because it's a Ferrari of a kitchen knife.
Oh, it is. It's beautiful. I'm looking forward to those. They're arriving this week. I'm really looking forward to it. And interestingly enough, those are being released by Open-L only into the USA and through a special foodie website. So I am really excited to have those into the shop in addition to all the other beautiful things. So if you're listening in and you want to get that cool Open-L, but you're not sure if your wife qualifies for this foodie knife challenge thing, we do have traditional things like diamond earrings and bracelets and beautiful stuff like that that's much less sharp than that knife.
Yeah, a smart man. And also on the Open-L's, just side note that we're talking about that kitchen knife, but y'all got a huge wall full of them.
We do, and we're expanding the variety every single day. Everything from the pocket knives to the gardening knives, the regular kitchen knives, paring knife sets. They even have some that are more for entertaining, some spreaders and small little novelty knives and cheese knives. So we've got an Open-L pretty much for any occasion.
Hey, a quick question, too, on customizing things, which y'all are so famous for. I mean, for the non-procrastinators, could they get in if they found that perfect piece of jewelry? Could they get engraving done now?
We still have time. We have lots of time for engraving, and we even have time for custom jewelry pieces. So if you want to do something, whether it's as tremendous as popping the question for this Valentine's Day, or just get a simple I love you pendant or something made with some engraving on it, we have time for any of those things.
All right, good deal. So let's get directions to come see y'all.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can always check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com, or check out the media platform, social media platforms, that is, Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Angelo, stay sharp.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
All right. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Grab a couple texts here, then we're going to get Ben Raines on the phone. Get him on, because he's got a tour to do. He's taking members of the Navy that are in town up to the Clotilda site. Eric, good question. Eric says, were those questions submitted earlier, or was that on the fly? Talking about the questions coming from the senators to the legal teams. He said the responses seem prepared. Absolutely. So everybody was aware. So while the senators have been sitting quietly listening to the House impeachment managers and then President Trump's defense team, they've been able to write out these questions. And then they submitted these questions going through the Chief Justice, and that's the process you're hearing. So, yes, it is a it's a known commodity, the questions. But what it's there for, I guess you could argue the other senators to hear it. In addition, come on, it's we the people that are the audience. Even though they're looking at their fellow members of the Senate, or not fellow members of the Senate, but the managers, the House managers, and then the defense team are looking at the senators. This is for consumption by we the people, right? I mean, this is what's going on here. And so they are crafting their answers to each, and the questions have been crafted. Yeah, I mean, they end up being an interrogatory. They ask a question, but along the way, they make this comment and that comment and that comment. I mean, it's just, you know, the way it works in Washington. All right, coming back, more of Midday Mobile. And so Ben Raines, he'll tell us about this trip he's taken today, but also his new book. I guess it'll be published. Well, we'll find out from him when it's going to be published. But his book is coming out sometime in the future, but it's finished. How about that? All about the search for the Clotilda and a lot more on that history. And he talks about it with us coming up next right here on Midday Mobile. Online, fmtalk1065.com. Check us out on Facebook, too, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. You can talk to me directly on Twitter, at fmtalk1065. Be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile online at fmtalk1065.com. And y'all say hello to my friend for a long time and a guy who has a phone ringing off the hook even more than normal. I don't know. He's probably used to it. Ben Raines. And he joins us now. A lot to do today. You're getting, you do tours of the Delta. You know, you take people out, show them the Delta, show them different parts of our coast here. But you've got some people that probably know their way around the boat. Are you taking them on your boat, Ben? What's happening when you take the Navy?
I am. And it's funny, you know, I mentioned I'd hurt my wrist. So yes. I was a little worried. I was thinking, well, gosh, what if I can't operate the boat with this hurt arm? And then I thought, well, I'm bringing a bunch of Navy guys.
Yeah. Right.
No problem. Of course, I'm bringing the Navy media team, so maybe they've never, you know. I mean, there's only one guy driving a battleship, right?
Right, but
so
they
it's
have
not
to know.
Like everybody in the Navy drives boats.
But they, I guess, and I don't know what the basic training is there, but I would hope that everybody, even if they had, you know, some other job, that would know how to navigate a center console. You know, drive.
I would hope so too.
And then you could say you
make a lap and stuff like that.
Yes, and say while we're here, I know y'all probably had this in basic training. Let's make my boat look like a Navy ship. So y'all, yeah. here's some cleaning supplies and all. I'm gonna get in so much trouble.
Yeah.
So you're taking the Navy. I get this. I get a memo today that the Navy is in town, and you're taking the Navy media team to go see the Clotilda.
Well, yeah, it's a real neat connection. There's a master chief in the Navy named Jason Lewis, who is a descendant of Cudjoe Lewis, or Charlie Lewis. I actually can't recall which one. But he is a descendant. And he grew up in the Happy Hill Housing Project, which was the Josephine Allen Housing Project. And as he says, you know, he made it out. Mm-hmm. The time he grew up there, he says most of his friends are dead or in jail. And you know, he I think Jason's about 40, and so yeah, you know, that was a rough time in Mobile, and certainly a rough time to be growing up in a housing project. So when the Clotilda stuff happened, he got very involved because it's his community and his heritage, his story as a descendant. So he started coming over here with Navy volunteers, and not one or two. I mean, 40 or 50,
wow.
And they began cleaning up a lot of Africa Town, vacant lots and things like that, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And so they've been doing it for 2 years now. So the Navy is coming to town to do a story about, you know, Jason and his family's heritage and the Navy's involvement trying to help. And they're all coming out of the Pensacola base. So it's a neat story. And, you know, what a great thing to do. These guys are all volunteer, and women. Men and women are all volunteering their time and have been for a long time.
You know, to talk about the Master Chief, of course, with his connections back to here, but he's obviously got the persuasion because he's got a bunch of other people coming with him doing this for the last couple of years on this cleanup. So he's obviously made a good case to them.
If you've ever heard him speak, you would understand. he does have an excellent gift of persuasion, and I would not be a bit surprised to see him as a pastor when he retires from the Navy. He's a very, very eloquent speaker, a wonderful guy. I love talking to him.
So yeah, okay, go ahead. So explain.
Well, his message is all about reconciliation. What he wants is to be standing on a stage somewhere with all the descendants and all the mayors and show the world that, you know, everybody forgave and they reconciled and that none of that matters. You know, we're here today and all that's in the past. And he talks often about how powerful a message that would be for people all over the world. If, you know, the descendants of the people who sent the Clotilda to Africa to buy these people and the descendants of the people who were brought here could come together. And it would be a big deal. Of course, that has never happened because the Mayer family have steadfastly refused to interact or participate with any of the descendants or any kind of event like that, which I think is a shame, and I hope they'll reconsider.
Right, because, I mean, to look at it, you make a good point. Descendants on both sides, but, you know, neither group was there. I mean, you have a bloodline, yes, and you could say, hey, that was in the past. Look at what's today. I have no issue with this person. That person has no issue with myself. We're moving forward in 2020.
And the mayors I've spoken to say, oh, no, they'll be asking us for reparation. And that's just not how reparations would work. You know, the idea of reparations is not you go to the people who enslaved your family and take their money. Because slavery was not just the people who owned a slave. Slavery was a societal institution. And it was all over the country. And so it wasn't just the slave owners who made money off the slaves. The men who made the shackles and chains to bring them across the ocean made money off the slaves. The families that owned shipyards and built ships. The people who sold the cotton and handled the cotton. The traders. All these people made money off of slaves. And, you know, our society was built on the backs of this forced labor. So, you know, reparations is a societal issue. It's not go find the family that owned your family and take their money. That's just not how it would ever work if it were ever to come to pass. So it's kind of a silly thing, I think, for the mayors to hide behind, personally. And I hope they'll choose a different course because, you know, these are smart guys. One of the three surviving oldest mayors is a lawyer. You know, anyway, you know them. Mm-hmm. I know you do.
Yep.
And you know, they could step up and help with the healing process here, and really, I think they ought to.
And I want to get to that. When I want to talk a little more about what's happening now, but I want to talk about on the other side of the Atlantic. And you talk about those that profited from this Kingdom of Dahomey, right? I mean, we're looking
absolutely.
At yeah, that's absolutely part and parcel with how those people were sold into slavery. Somebody did it on the other side of the Atlantic, and get into that in a second. But I want to talk more because I got this presser here for everybody to know. This is happening on Friday. Says a Africa Town honoring the service of these Navy men and women. Special event 3:30 Friday, January 31st at Mobile County Training School, which is at 800 Whitley Street, Mobile 36610. This week, your time, commanders of the U.S. Navy and local leaders of the Naval Cleanup Crews are expected to attend. So these are the folks that you're showing the Clotilda site to today.
That's right. That's right.
And so, but we're all invited. It seems like out on Friday to come to this event.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I go to all the events in Africatown. It's always a good time. There's music, there's food, there's dancing, and, you know, it's fun.
I'm good at music and food. The dancing, yeah. I think I'm good, but I'm good at music and, I mean, at food and have a, okay, so that, but that's going to be.
You just got to loosen up. John,
oh, don't worry. You've seen me, guy. I'll get after it. No, not that I don't like the dancing. It's just I don't know how. Oh, I think I'm pretty good. I've just heard from others that I'm not. So that goes on Friday. Can you give us a quick update on where we are with the Clotilda? I mean, you're going out to spot, but what's the process right now that you know of?
Well, so the state filed their admiralty case and officially has custody of the wreck, which was always going to be how it turned out because it's a shipwreck in Alabama state waters. And under federal law and state law, the state automatically has a claim. And you know, I got a notice from the court as an interested party basically saying, you know, you may have some sort of claim if you want to be a part of this, now's your time. And of course, I didn't want to take ownership of the ship. because what would I do with it, right?
Right.
So it's still sitting in the mud. Doug Jones just got a law passed through Congress, so we've got about 500,000 coming to the Smithsonian to begin trying to figure out what to do and how to dig it up and explore it a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if they did some things with that money that they were hoping to do previously. When they were exploring the ship back before it was confirmed as the Clotilda, they were planning to dredge it out and try and see what was down in the bottom of it. But there was so much material in it, wood, you know, timber and stuff, that they got scared and were afraid if they sucked the mud out that everything in there would collapse on the diver that was operating the dredge.
Right.
So I would imagine that with that money, that might be the first thing we do, we see done, is they go in there with, you know, some real industrial divers in hard hat gear, that, you know, with communications equipment, and go in there and try and clear the ship out a little bit and see what's down in the bottom in the hold, and go from there. We know the ship was dynamited, and, you know, I have been told by John Sledge, who interviewed Joseph Mayer, the oldest of the three surviving brothers, and I believe they're grandchildren of Timothy Mayer. Joseph told John Sledge when they were on the river that he and his father blew the ship up at some point in the late 50s, or tried to, that they dynamited it anyway.
Wait. In the late 50s, but it had already been scuttled and would be on the bottom at that point, right?
Right, right. And apparently they were still worried about charge being bound.
Like dropping it in the... So dynamiting by, okay, it's already underwater, it's stuck there in the mud, and
yeah,
then you come in...
I think maybe the wreck came up closer to the surface at the time. And
like a low river or something happened, or low river north wind, or...
And so they just wanted to, you know, try and destroy it. I know some of the mayors were big scuba divers, and so maybe that was part of the... Maybe, you know, it may have been something they thought would be fun to do. You know, but they did not destroy the ship. They did knock some pieces of it loose and spread them around a little bit, and they're on the bottom around the ship, you know, sections of it and things. But the bulk of the hull is intact, of the hold anyway, and in the river mud. We just don't know what the fire did to it back in 1860 when they burned it, and we don't know what has happened to it in the 160 years since that it's been sitting on the river bottom.
Okay.
But there's good reason to be optimistic that there may still be quite a few artifacts inside that would be important, in addition to just the hull, just the bones of the ship. Because, you know, this is a haunted object in our history at this point. We had 20,000 slave ships in the world slave trade over a 400-year period. They have found 13 of them in the world total, counting the Clotilda. And the Clotilda is the only one that ever brought slaves to America. So in our national history, you know, it's an important artifact, and what I want to see is the hull of it put in a museum in Africatown. But you'd also see pieces of it in Smithsonian, and pieces of it even in museums in Benin, which is modern-day Dahomey, where the slaves were sold from.
Okay, we come back from the break. I want to talk about that, your trip, and I got a couple other questions on what's going on with the Clotilda now, but we're talking to our buddy Ben Raines. He is taking members of the Navy on his boat today. I would just say, y'all drive. I mean, in the Navy, y'all drive. I'll sit back and watch. I'll just direct things. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, online at fmtalk1065.com. You can get podcasts of this show and the 40-plus hours a week of live local programming we do every week around here. Go FM Talk 106.5, click podcast, or you subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer. I probably missed one. If there's a podcast platform out there, we're probably on it. So go ahead and subscribe and enjoy and talk. It's been too long to talk to my buddy Ben Raines, and he's got, as always, a lot of stuff going on, getting ready to take members of the Navy to the Clotilda site today, and then we have the events coming up on Friday. You said this group has been 2 years here doing cleanups in Africatown?
Yeah, since Well, since I guess since January of 2018 or so, after I found the first ship, you know, the one that turned out not to be the Clotilda.
Right.
Yeah, so they've been going at it that long. And, you know, there's a lot of energy in Africatown. A lot of people want to kind of bring it back. And, you know, I've interviewed so many people now. I've just finished writing my book about the whole Clotilda saga. And I've interviewed so many people who grew up in Africatown. And, you know, I got here in 99, and the place they describe, I have no concept of. It had restaurants, beauty shops, barbershops, cleaners, multiple grocery stores, multiple pharmacies, a movie theater, you know, all in that area. And a lot of that district where all that was is now buried under the highway that comes off the bridge. So, you know, cleaning it up and trying to get more houses put back in where all the vacant lots are and things is all part of the, you know, they're all moving toward kind of resurrecting Africatown and trying to make it a place people want to live again the way it used to be.
Hey, Ben, you finish the book, when do you know when that would be released for sale, or has that been set?
There are multiple things that play into this, I've learned. You know, Simon & Schuster's publishing it, so they're a big house, and they know how to do this. It's going to be months. Hopefully it'll be out in the early fall.
Okay.
But, you know, that's not a promise, because I'm not in charge of it, but they have the book, and it'll take them a few months to get it, you know, ready for printing and get copies to reviewers and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully it'll be out pretty soon. I'll tell you, I think it's pretty good.
I know you've been working on it. Like, y'all, just pulling back the curtain, I'll text Ben. And he's like, basically, shut up, Sullivan. I'm working on the book. Leave me be.
So I've been starting every day at 5 a.m. for months and months and months. And not many people have seen me in that amount of time.
Well, that's what it takes. What about your trip? So I'm watching your trip to Benin, and you mentioned that as we went to break, and how this figures in to the story of the Clotilda. Kind of go back to 101 level for everybody to understand this.
So Benin is a country in West Africa. It's next to Nigeria. It's a little bigger than Alabama in size. It's about the size of Pennsylvania. And it is where everybody involved with the Clotilda came from. The people who caught the slaves, the Dahomans, that entire kingdom, the old ancient kingdom of Dahomey, is inside of modern-day Benin. And all the tribes, the people were part of that were captured, were also in modern-day Benin. So Benin has Benin is wrestling with this very issue right now. You know, I was talking about reconciliation here between, for instance, the Mayer family and the descendants. There, right in that country, are all the tribes that were either capturing and killing people or were getting captured and killed.
Right.
And so they're wrestling with that in their nation right now, and they have a lot of activities going on. They're trying to build new museums to recognize the history, and they're really excited about the Clotilda because, you know, it is the best-known slave story in the world, and it's the only one where we know where the people came from, where they were captured. You know, we know who captured them. We know where they were sold, which was Ouidah in Benin. That's the big slave port. We know when they were sold. We know the beach they left from. We know the people who bought them, the ship they were on. We know where they ended up in America. And we know where they ended up after slavery because the descendants are still in Africatown. So Benin is really keen to make this connection and have museums there that walk people through this story. And, you know, having been there, it was just mind-blowing. And the Africans who came to Africatown would have felt very at home in some ways. They would have recognize a lot of plants and that kind of thing, but they didn't recognize winter because Benin never gets cold. The coldest it ever gets there is about 70 degrees year-round. Winter was a big deal for them, but it is an amazing country. Papayas growing everywhere you look on these tall, skinny trees, mango trees all over the place, and they're as big as magnolias, like a giant southern magnolia. Imagine that thing covered in tens of thousands of mangoes.
Oh, you're talking about my dream.
And eat these things. Oranges everywhere, pineapples, beautiful country, just all kinds of gorgeous looking birds and flowers. You know, and they also have elephants, lions, Cape buffalo, cheetah, you know, all the big animals. We saw monkeys running around. And when you get, there's one really big city, and it's about 750,000 people. When you get outside of it, you're in a realm where, you know, you go to villages and you see mud huts on the side of the road and people living rough in little, you know, mud shacks with tin roofs. And then you see big compounds that look very fancy. And, you know, the market, they grow tomatoes year round, which as a tomato lover was fantastic.
Yeah.
Every meal had tomatoes. They eat fish all the time. I ate one fish I'm almost certain was a speckled trout. It was fried whole on the plate, and it was definitely in the drum family. The skin was gone, so I couldn't tell if it was a speckled trout or a white trout or whatever, but it had the two big fang teeth, you know, up front. and the Atlantic there is just full of all kinds of fish. You know, I'm seeing mackerel in the markets. You're seeing these things smoked. And a person who fishes in the Gulf of Mexico or Mobile Bay, you would have recognized a whole lot of things. They're fish that are definitely related to menhaden and, you know, all the different fish families I saw there. And then I went to a village that's called Gandhi that is out in the middle of a lake. It's miles from shore. There are 40,000 people that live on stilts in the middle of this lake.
Whoa. Okay. It's not an island? It's like a...
No. They live in houses on stilts over the water. Now, they built a little island to put the school on, but the houses, for the most part, are just on stilts.
Why?
Over the water.
Why is that?
Well, because of slavery and the Dahomans. So the Dahomans were a really vicious group, and they, when they would attack a village, they would kill everybody who was too old or too young to be a slave, and they would take the people who were 12 to 25 or 30. And that's, you know, the Clotilda passengers, we know some were as young as 12, and the oldest were about 30. Most of them were kind of 15 to 20 in that age range. So this tribe in Benin, the Dahomans were coming and raiding everyone. It's called the Tofinu tribe. So they knew that the Dahomans wouldn't travel over water before they attacked people to enslave them because it was against their religion. It was bad. You know, their religion is literally voodoo. It's called Vodun, the parent of all the voodoo Caribbean and Louisiana. So the Vodun religion, you're not supposed to travel over water before battle. So these folks moved out in the middle of this lake.
Brilliant.
And
brilliant.
Know, the Dahomans were still raiding villages until 1880. So they stayed out there, and they're still out there.
That's what I was going to say. So this is what started because of the Dahomans raiding for slaves.
Right.
But that village, when you went there in 2019, the folks are still living there.
Oh, they're still out there big time. Yeah, absolutely. They live there. No,
this is crazy. Wow.
And I've got pictures of it on my Facebook page. You can click through some of them. We rode out in a long, skinny wooden boat with a 10-horsepower Tohatsu, and we rode all around the village. They're little kids who are like 6 years old with push poles pushing these 30-foot-long canoes all by themselves. The school bus is a giant boat that all these kids get in, and then a bunch of the kids have little dugouts, and you'll see four or five of them in a dugout push-pulling themselves along to get home from school. You'll see women with stacks of merchandise, fabrics, food, shoes, all this stuff on this canoe you can't believe is still afloat and balancing. And they're paddling through the village, letting people buy things off the canoe. They're a shop.
So like a floating shop that comes to, I guess, if everything's on stilts, might as well bring the shop to you.
Floating 5 and 10, you know, and there are bars you can paddle up to, there are hotels you can paddle up to.
I like this.
Just fascinating. And they do aquaculture there, you know, and you'd recognize the plants. A lot of the Delta plants you see there, the Phragmites, you know, the cane along the causeway.
Yeah.
Water hyacinth from the Amazon is there too and all this. And, you know, they're catching tilapia and a bunch of other fish, and they sell them at the market. They smoke them and everything, and they're raising them. They've made pens out of the reeds where they just stick them in the water and crisscross them and weave them into a network, you know, and like a wall. And they're raising tilapia in these as aquaculture to sell back in town. It was fascinating, just fascinating. But, you know, then there's all the slavery stuff in the country. They are not hiding from their role in this. They're brutal monuments all over with, you know, really graphic images of people chained and bound, you know, arms and legs cut off of different, you know, they're not hiding from any aspect of the war, all that, because they're trying to put away all those tribal hostilities. You know, there's still places there where one group won't talk to the other and tell their children, don't talk to them because they're the ones who chased us in slavery. So it's still a fresh wound there. And of course, Rwanda, the genocide, was just a tribal fight.
Right.
You know, that's all it was. It wasn't. There wasn't anything more to it. So this is a real, you know, they're trying to have kind of a national reconciliation and move past all that stuff and turn it into an engine that can make money for the country. You know, they think probably about 30% of all slaves sold into South America and the Caribbean and America came from Benin.
Which, just because, I mean, and it's because the Kingdom of Dahomey, that was their business, right? I mean, that's why so many came from there. It's no other...
Right. I mean, no, absolutely. They quit doing all the stuff you would normally do in a society, like farming and all that kind of stuff. And every year they would make these raids that lasted several months. The army they had was, and this was, you know, a little place, a little bigger than Alabama, population probably about 200,000. They would take 50,000 people and go raid the surrounding kingdoms.
Wow.
And take them over. And you know, Cudjoe Lewis's village was... You know, there was thousands of people there. It was a big walled city with eight gates, and they had warriors. He was one of the, he was being trained as one of the warriors. It was a market town. It wasn't, you know, we're not talking about some little place with 50 people living in a, you know, an enclosure of shrubbery or something. They had a big mud, you know, 10-foot-high dirt wall all the way around, all this kind of stuff. And it was, you know, this was war. They were, they had machetes and they had weapons. They had guns that the Dahomans had been trading for. You know, for slaves as part of the whole exchange. So that was the business of the country. That was how for 250 years, that's what they did. And they were internationally known for it. You know, it's one of the most infamous and brutal regimes in world history.
And they are connected to us right here through the Clotilda.
Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, some of the descendants are actually descendants of the Dahomans. There were at least two who were what's called Fon. That's the tribe and the language of Dahomey. And Fon is all over Benin. It's the Yoruba language. One of the fellows that came, Gumpa, he was, or Peter Lee, that's his chimney you can see on the side of Bay Bridge Road,
Standing
right over the ship. That's his chimney. From his house, he was a noble in the court. He was in the king's court, you know, one of his advisors. And when William Foster went there to buy the slaves, he went and they sat in the palace and they drank, you know, whatever they drank, and they talked and everything. And then the king told him, "You can pick someone from my court as a personal slave for you." Because you're such a man of fine character and good judgment.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
He let him pick one of his court advisors. And so this man, who was, you know, a noble, suddenly found himself shackled and shoved into the barracoon on his way to America. And
holy
so his descendants
cow.
Are here.
Wow. Okay, so this is, and we'll talk about this going forward, and I'm sure this is just a taste of what we'll get in the book.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
All right. I know you got to take a ride up the river, so I'm going to let you do that, and we'll get you back on the show very soon. Good to talk to you. It's been too long, man.
Likewise. I hope to see you on the water soon.
Yes, absolutely.
All right,
I'm coming that
thanks
way.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, always a pleasure. Ben Raines joining us, and, of course, talking Clotilda. We've been talking to that man for years about this, and there'll be a book coming up maybe this fall. It's not in his control. It's publisher now, but we'll keep our eyes on that. Man, what a story. What a story. We're just getting a taste of it.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum show on the way in just a few. Big thank you to Ben Raines. He'll get him back on here soon. His trip to Benin, I was just looking at it. The pictures on his Facebook page. It looks fascinating. Just really, really cool. At least through the pictures, it looked like something for the for like a major cultural difference, but with some similarities. So you look through the pictures and see what he was kind of referencing when he was talking to us. All right, a couple news updates here from our news partners, WKRG. Another one of these. So we got this over the last hour. Mobile Police Department investigating a shooting as a homicide. MPD is working the report of this homicide on Schwartz Street today. Scene reported between Edwards Avenue, Clement Street. Happened about 11:45 this morning. So that's MPD still working it. We haven't gotten any more information on that. We will pass along when we do. Also, of course, up there and to the right in Washington, they are continuing to ask questions. So here's the process going on. So the senators have been listening as much as they can. The senators have been listening to the House impeachment managers and the president's defense team, right, over the last week and change. And today, the questions that they have come up with and filed and presented to Chief Justice Roberts are being asked. So the senator identified, Senator so-and-so from this state asked this, and then the question is asked, and then depending if it's towards the House impeachment managers or the president's defense team, they get up and answer the question. So one of the things it does, though, I think is interesting, is lessens the amount of grandstanding. We have these senatorial committees, right? They meet and they're deciding on this, that, or the other to confirm this person or that person. Most of the process is them getting on the record or getting some clip for a campaign ad saying this, that, or the other, and then maybe like 10% of it's actually asking the question. Well, this process of having to file these questions by hand and then have them read and then have the people answer them does take some parts out of that. And the process is moving quickly, I would think. It seems like it's moving quickly to me. Of course, how quickly, of course, will depend on going forward with the impeachment proceedings, whether they're going to be witnesses or not. But for right now, it seems to be moving along. We'll watch this. Now, and I wish I could tell you definitively. I mean, all I know is watching. You have, the story's been that Mitch McConnell doesn't have the votes, doesn't have the Republican votes to block the witnesses, okay? And that was all the questions about Bolton and will he be called as a witness and, the leaked manuscript out there. And now there's another set of rumblings going on that say something has changed and maybe McConnell does have the votes to block. This keeps changing. Like, it is, since this show started, it's changed once. We've only been on for 2 hours. So just keep your eyes on that, and we'll know more about that tomorrow when we get cranked up with Mobile Mornings starting at 6. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. Podcasts are there. Online opinion poll questions there. Moon Pie Minutes in podcast form waiting for you on the front page of FM Talk 1065, plus three big things, top news stories of the day, all that good stuff there. Or if you like to do the social media thing, facebook.com/FM Talk 1065. Give us a like over there. And you can talk directly with me on Twitter at FM Talk 1065. Right, Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Talk to you tomorrow morning at 6.